Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. We are taking a look at the Columbus restaurant scene on All Sides Weekend. Joining me this morning, restaurant reviewer Rich Terapak and his son, who do restaurant reviews here at WOSU, and Miriam Abbott of The Other Paper. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Transaction fees was the first thing I thought it would be important, at least from a restaurateur's point of view. Uh-huh. I don't know that diners would necessarily take this into consideration, but as part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, the fees that banks charge businesses for swiping your debit card will be going down, and apparently it's a fairly significant cost for restaurants.
It used to be, I believe, about a 44-cent charge per swipe on a Visa or MasterCard. And what the new bill proposes to do is to bring it down to about like 12 or 14 cents. This will be terrific for restaurateurs themselves. I don't think customers will see a major difference other than that places that only accept cash presently because of such fees may begin to accept credit card transactions because they're more reasonable now. So that could be a benefit to diners, but to restaurant owners, it's certainly a benefit.
Well, and restaurants operate on a very, very narrow margin.
Very narrow, yes. Usually under, you know, 2 or 3% in a lot
except
of cases.
Except at the bar.
Yeah. Well, that's where they make
food's
it up.
The food's a loss most of the time, and, you know, absolutely. And then the bar is where they make their money typically.
I didn't know this actually until I'd gone to an arts fair last year, I think the Upper Arlington Arts Festival. Vendors actually end up paying for rewards on credit, and I don't know if debit cards offer rewards, but that 3 or 4% that you might be getting kicked back to you is actually paid for by the vendor. It's no gift from the bank.
Oh, you mean not?
There's no free lunch, as they say. That doesn't surprise me, but I'd never thought of it that way.
So I wonder if those programs
will continue. Probably not. And just like, you know, free checking is probably going to become a thing of the past as well. A lot of the ways that, you know, banks have been able to offer these incentives is by, you know, charging someone else basically for it. You know, they always say that the cost is always passed on somewhere.
Now, and I think the interest rate that people pay would also, also continues to fund banks. If you don't pay off your credit card at the end of the month, then the bank makes money off of you. So I don't think they're going to the poor folks' home because they've made it easier for restaurants to use credit cards.
Yeah, so we're not likely.
The margins on credit card late fees and those kind of – late fees actually have been somewhat modified, I think. But the interest rate charged above what, you know, what the bank is being charged for their money.
Well, the overnight rate to the bank is practically zero.
Zero,
right now.
Yeah.
So and most credit cards are still in the area of usually about 9.9% to 27.9%.
Right.
So, no, they are not going to the poorhouse.
Now, we'll hear from some bankers that they need to do that because their losses on credit cards are extraordinary, but they have to be really extraordinary to make up for that 26% difference.
Exactly.
Yeah.
292-8513, we're talking about restaurants with restaurant critics Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Miriam Abbott of The Other Paper. Well, it's patio season. Anybody been to any good patios lately? Some people actually go for the ambience rather than the food in the summertime. They want to sit outside, kind of people watch, mingle with other people.
You know, it went from so cold and rainy to so hot that I have for myself, completely missed patio season.
Yeah.
I've headed right in for the air conditioning in the last weeks.
Yeah, unless you're dining, you know, after 8:30 at night, patio season was practically missed the same way we missed spring.
I think the only patios dinners we've had are our back patio, which would have been about two, and that's, you know, that's a place where we usually dine a lot during the summertime. I think it's remarkable, though, how many outdoor dining things we see around town now compared to 10 years ago. I don't know if it's been easier to get a permit to do that.
Smoking ban.
Yeah.
Right. Wouldn't that be what makes it attractive?
That could be.
Well, but you can't even walk down Gay Street anymore on the sidewalk because there are so many patios in front of them.
It's great for the restaurants, though, because it enables them to add seating that they otherwise, you know, mm-hmm. would have to pay for by rent. And they're patios are very popular. I know that with the Piata that just went in at Remington and Main in Bexley, I mean, the outside is packed all the time. It's a real lovely patio. That's the last place I think I ate outside.
Yeah, we ate with them, actually.
And there's new Cafe Istanbul going in, actually, on Main Street in Bexley as well, where they're building a whole stone patio with a fountain in front of the place. Mm-hmm. It looks great. It used to be a parking lot for Flavors Eatery. And so I'm really looking forward to that opening up.
Because he lives a half a block away.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Cafe Istanbul, the one out at Easton.
Yeah,
so,
that's great.
So, yeah.
The other place that we noticed one, that it was rare to see this right on Broad Street, is Lexi's, where we all had lunch this past week.
Right, Broad and Third. Yeah.
Broad and Third of the Chase Bank building. They've got a lovely patio on the,
an area
the west side of the building.
Yeah, an area that was never prior, you know, a restaurant. Most of those, you know, go through cycles and whatnot. This was, I don't know what it used to be, but there was nothing there, and now they've turned it into a great space. Lexi's, if you haven't heard, is she's actually the daughter of the owner of Danny's Deli over on Front Street, which is really quite famous for their corned beef. And
the home of the Little Nicky.
Yeah.
with that's right.
Enormous sandwiches. Little. But the new space at Lexi's is, I mean, it's
very
a far cry from Danny's as well. It's a beautiful space. I think it'll do quite well.
And the quality was as good.
As good, absolutely.
Yeah. And there's a line outside the door.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And the difficult thing, of course, coming here from the Fawcett Center to go downtown is that I have to find a parking spot, reorient myself, which you both know I'm not good at.
You're getting better. It's getting better.
But this is mainly for downtown diners because unless you can walk there, it's not easy.
Right. And I didn't notice how late they're open.
No, actually, and I did want to comment on that because a lot of the downtown restaurants are only open, you know, till 3 o'clock.
I think they have a happy hour.
I was just going to say, they actually have a happy hour, and I think they're open till like 8 or something at night. So for downtown people, you know, getting out of work or hungry or, you know, aren't headed right home.
Or just to stop and pick up a sandwich or something.
Yeah. Or for a happy hour on a patio in the middle of downtown, too, which there isn't a lot of that
either. And it's close enough to that whole row on Gay Street that there's, you know, there's some synergy there.
Mm-hmm. And there are now some upstairs gardens in some of these restaurants. I think Latitude 41 has a garden on their rooftop, as does Tip Top. I mean, it's really remarkable what's been going on.
You've seen that happening in Chicago for several years now.
We're a minute behind.
Yeah, always. No, we tend to follow Chicago. But, yeah, I think Latitude 41 actually does a lot of their own produce on their roof, which is, I mean, you know, it doesn't get any closer than that. Yeah.
And I think we've talked before about the owner of the Top has a garden plot.
Right. Craig Hoover's got, he's got some land that they grow, you know, as much of their veg as they can, obviously. And in the winter, obviously, that's not possible. But,
I think Dragonfly does that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I
talk
wonder
about
how
local sourcing.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you actually own the farmland yourself, it's something else. And Kent Peters over at
Black Creek.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, he has a farm and animals.
A full
and all
farm.
Sorts of
yeah, that's a fully functional farm.
And I wonder how this rainy, wet season we've talked so much about the farmers not being able to get their crops in, how it's affected these rooftop or small restaurateurs who are just trying to grow their own produce.
Well, it's probably not as bad for them as it is for the farmers. I mean, I grow 16 different vegetables in my backyard. My garden's going great.
So we'll look forward for a restaurant opening.
I don't use heavy equipment to sow my seeds. These ones that, you know, I drive around a lot in my work, and some of these fields, you know, especially south of Columbus, when I go to Chillicothe, you know, their corn is barely out of the ground.
Well, they've been underwater.
But the thing was, they couldn't put their equipment into these wet fields because they, you know, it'd sink.
I haven't found a lot of local strawberries this year.
And
I feel like that's a harbinger of something frightening this summer.
It is going to be.
Peaches will be sad.
Yeah. And for commodity prices in general, if Ohio's not producing a lot of corn,
soybeans.
And soybeans, it's going to be trouble.
for the markets. This morning's news was they've got at least the same amount of crop in. It might be a little slower to be harvested, but the corn growers seem to be
they're
okay. Yeah.
292-8513. We're talking about restaurants, and John has been waiting here on the line. Good morning.
Is that for John?
That's for John.
Ah, okay. This is like a two-part question, sort of a softball question, but. Restaurants in the past, at least the corporate ones, have been somewhat inflexible, and I'm wondering if your eaters there have a list, it doesn't have to be lengthy, of what restaurants are more flexible in the kitchen for people with health considerations, like people that have heart issues might want to have olive oil instead of butter, that sort of thing. And then as a corollary question, which restaurants make the most in their advertising and in reality, of course, of using local produce and things like grass-fed beef instead of corporate industrialized food?
Well, I think certainly we've already mentioned a couple in talking about the local sourcing. I think the folks at Black Creek not only grow their own crops, but they also grow their own cattle and sheep. And so their product, I don't know if it's totally organic, but
it's not 100%.
Okay.
No.
The folks at Dragonfly, I'm sure would be, I'm confident that would be all organic. I'm trying to think who else advertises as only organic.
As only organic. I think lots of places have organic options, right? So maybe if the emphasis became having something organic to choose from, like I know I saw a menu from Rigsby's where there was Ohio cheese and locally grown arugula. So, and I know neither of those were the word organic. I can't remember seeing that word.
I would think the people, the folks at North Star do a great job of making sure that their beets come from one particular farm, et cetera. And I think you can find their product to be organic. Again, as to the protein products, I'm not sure that there's a restaurant that has exclusively organic meats.
And I think demand is what affects the chain restaurants the most, to the first part of the question, which was what larger corporate restaurants are responsive to customer needs. When it comes to a need like I prefer olive oil to butter, I would think it would be difficult to have that need accommodated at a large restaurant. They're just not built for that kind of accountability, and there's not a substantial demand. But that's my impression.
I couldn't agree more. I think that, yeah, you're going to be much more flexible with an owner-operator or an owner-manager in that situation. These corporate interests, you know, their inventory is done so specifically based on metrics on what they have sold in the past and what they need that to accommodate anything outside of those metrics that they don't plan for is quite difficult for them to do. Whereas, you know, if you're dealing with a local owner, you're much more likely to get that flexibility.
Yeah.
So gluten-free, they're responsive
but
to that
talk about
it's huge demand.
Yeah, right? Because there is such a huge demand for it. Almost everybody now offers some gluten-free entrees were
right. And if you have any food allergies, you certainly would want to stay away from, you know, a lot of the more corporate places. I think just because a lot of times also their staffs aren't as knowledgeable about the ingredients in the food as it tends to be with locally owned places.
Yeah,
well, and of course, you probably impressed me the most with this where you told us one time about working out in Arizona and actually being tested on your knowledge of food and
absolutely every single ingredient, three attributes of the 30 wines, you know, we served by the glass. I mean, yeah, we had to know absolutely everything, and that was a mom and pop owned restaurant, and that's why. Not that corporate, you know, nicer, you know, Cameron Mitchell type restaurants don't train their staffs adequately. Most of them do. I just mean more if you're speaking to chains, you know, as you get down into the lower mid-level, they're not going to be able to accommodate you. And a lot of times they aren't as well informed as you need them to be.
Right.
They will laugh at you at Burger King.
Especially at Burger King.
Well, I think if you have heart issues, you probably shouldn't be at Burger King.
No.
292-8513. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll be back on All Sides Weekend in just a moment.
Carl Castle has done everything. Newsman, judge, scorekeeper, acclaimed celebrity impersonator. But what he really wants to do is sing, which is why we are going to Nashville, Tennessee this week, and why we're inviting on country music legend Vince Gill to do an intervention. I'm Peter Sagal. Sometimes the song in your heart should stay there. Come find out why on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me begins tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 82 degrees at 11:20. Sunny skies today and a high near 90. Partly cloudy tonight, a low right around 70 degrees. A slight chance of morning rain on Saturday, then sunshine throughout the day and a high of 92.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, celebrating our nationally ranked businesses and nonprofit leaders, making our community stronger. With donors and funds in 33 Ohio counties, the Columbus Foundation, where your philanthropy and your community come together.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking about restaurants and food here in Columbus with our panel of restaurant critics, Rich Terapak, his son Rich, who do restaurant reviews here at WOSU, and Miriam Abbott, who writes for the other paper. Welcome all. We do have a caller on the line, Jessica, who has a question about tipping in restaurants. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm not a patron of the Waffle House, but I just happened to be there a couple of weeks ago to take a order out, a takeout order, and there's no tax on that, and I guess tipping is optional at all the places that I've been in my life, but they have a standard 10%. They call it either a tax or a gratuity or whatever they call it. They charge you 10% on a takeout item, and I was wondering how standard is that throughout the restaurant industry that you're forced to pay a specific tax or gratuity or whatever on a takeout order?
I would say that's borderline illegal, to be honest, and I mean that. You should not tip on takeout orders. You don't pay tax on them either. There was no service provided. You went to the restaurant and picked up the food, a product that they sell. There was no service involved. If they do that,
unless they count the people taking the order over the telephone, that seems
really.
But those
aren't servers.
It's really unusual. I have never heard of that. Actually.
Me either.
Well, I didn't either. But I'm sure what I haven't heard of, you have heard of 50 million times. And there also is a sign up there that says 10% will be applied. And I did challenge it the first time. But, like I said, I don't go there that often, and I didn't, I just wasn't comfortable with it, never heard of it. And, I'm not going to fight over, 70 cents. But
right.
I did want to take it to a higher authority.
I don't know if we're the authority, but I would just ask for extra syrup.
I do take out a lot because I have children and I don't want to bring them places. And I have to say, I actually do tip. Because I see the people at the bar taking their time putting the order in, and so it's something that in my experience feels right to me. I do a lot of takeout, and so it. I'm there a lot, and it seems to be in my best interest to tip. So, I do it about the same as what I do at a table. So I do about 20. It covers my tush.
Yeah.
I mean, I figure it's better to be one way than the other, and so it's in my best interest to get out my pocketbook. But that's for me.
I think that's very generous, but I can say, having worked in several restaurants,
nobody wants my money.
No. People do want your money, and I'm sure they absolutely do appreciate it, especially if you're a regular somewhere and you want to keep good face with them. But having worked in several restaurants, that is quite uncommon. Very few people tip on pickup orders.
Yeah. Now, I usually do.
I'm
if
special. Oh, I feel good.
Well, I do, not as much as I would if I was actually sitting down and being served. But where I typically do it is when there are kids, young high school, young college looking kids, I give them a buck or two, I just think. And then when I call with my order,
it also depends if it's a bartender you're picking up from or if it's you're picking up at a register of some sort.
Yeah.
A bartender, I will actually drop a couple dollars on, just like I would if you got me a drink, because it's just a one back errand. But I certainly wouldn't tip.
McDonald's says, I don't tip there.
I'm glad to hear that.
And that is takeout.
For your next session in therapy.
That's right.
What about the interim where, say, at the North Star, where you place the order at the register?
Counter, I don't tip.
And you go sit down and somebody delivers the food to you. That's all they do. They don't take the order or whatever. They just, you know, see your number 17, and they'll deliver number 17's meal.
If I leave a mess on the table, I leave, you know, I'll usually at least $5 for whoever's coming to pick it up. And I don't know if that's the busser or the, you know, they don't really have servers, I suppose. And then I'm sure I imagine they pool those tips at the end. So in that case, I do tip. I don't do it as a specific percentage of whatever I ordered. It's right. More just because I left a mess to clean up, and it seems appropriate.
Yeah.
But I think typically if you are going up to a counter and ordering, aren't you also then required to take a tray or whatever you got your food on and get rid of the
Some places, yes. Some places, no.
Yeah,
it just depends.
Well, it's interesting, and I don't think I've ever heard of that where there's a surcharge unless it's parties of 10 or more or whatever that the gratuity is actually
right,
added to.
For dining in, yeah. But I have never, ever heard of that.
But with the sign, are they okay? Like, as long as they post that warning, does that make it? Because like,
you said
borderline illegal, and now I'm thinking, whoa, is it okay if you have a sign?
I suppose if you make people, I would think you'd need to make them aware in advance of ordering. I mean, like when you order, you have to, there's a markup of 10% for your pickup order as a gratuity to us. I mean, I think that tacking that on, you know, most people when they're picking up food, you know, especially at a Waffle House, aren't planning to leave a gratuity, I don't think.
Yeah, I think they better be posting some kind of signage and giving some kind of warning. Otherwise, I'd be suspicious that they're just, you know, totally pocketing them.
But even if they're posting a sign, if you call a place
right.
to place an order, you're not going to see a sign until you get there.
Yeah, you're right. When it's a call-in, you know, you may go, particularly if it's a bunch of kids picking up whatever, they may scrape together the exact amount of money for that for those three pizzas.
I feel like pizza delivery is always a crapshoot too, though. Like I never know what the total is going to be until they get to my door, or you know, until I get done and they say, "Okay, here's your total," and then I'm like, "Okay, how did that work?" Do you know the so?
Yeah, you're right. They could pretty much make up what they want, and yeah, you don't know. Some places tell you, but of course, you always tip those guys.
We are talking about food and restaurants here on All Sides Weekend. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking with Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Miriam Abbott of The Other Paper. And we have Jennifer calling from Newark who wants to comment on transaction fees. Go ahead.
Hi. I was listening, and I just wanted to clarify it's debit card fees that are the big difference in what was finalized this week, not credit card fees. I work for a small savings and loan, and the debit cards that we offer our customers to access their checking accounts, the fees are changing. We don't have credit cards. We're too small for something like that. And most small community banks don't have credit cards.
And Jennifer, what has the actual fee gone from and to?
Well, right now we're struggling to figure out what our costs have been, but we estimate our costs are around 50 cents per transaction, and we'll be able to charge around 20 cents now with the new rule, so we'll lose money.
Okay, because so, I thought I had heard that it had gone from 12 or 14 up to 20.
Yes, so the final rule was approximately 20. It has a few different fees that we're still trying to learn what it will do for us.
And what are you talking about doing to make up for that loss of 30 cents?
We're really struggling with it. We'll likely have to charge monthly fees on checking accounts that right now we don't charge on, but we don't want to do that. So we're dragging our feet and trying to figure out what can we do to make sure that we can still provide it because it's such an important service.
Who does the credit union pay a fee to when it costs 50 cents per transaction?
It's I work for a savings and loan. But
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Because credit unions would be the same thing of we have to pay the intermediary. So the merchant goes to a service and the banks go to the services in between. And these are just networks. They're called the Plus Network, the Star Network. There are all these third-party companies out there.
All those logos you see on the back of your card.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So that you go to the ATM and you see all those logos. And those are the companies that charge. So whether you sign your name or you put in a PIN number, it goes through different networks. MasterCard and Visa have a lot of control over those. And so those fees kind of get dispersed and make it happen. So we want those networks out there. That's a really important thing, and all those computerizations working behind the scenes. But unfortunately, it's not always an easy thing to know, okay, what is that one transaction going to cost? So, and when you guys were talking about it, I felt for the small restaurants that have such a fine line of profit, because we're feeling the same on the savings and loan. We're like, wait a minute, we're trying to provide services for our customers, and it's so hard right now. But it is a debit card issue, not so much a credit card.
Not a credit card, yeah.
And then that was one of the concerns in Dodd-Frank, was that the local banks and savings and loans would be really hurt by this, whereas some of the bigger banks can absorb this cost a lot easier.
Exactly. So we're struggling.
It's a real shame because the big banks caused all these problems that caused Dodd-Frank, and now look who's suffering. And banks are still too big to fail.
It's still a problem, and unfortunately, as a 25-year veteran in the community banks, I believe that we do provide great services for our customers, but
indeed
we
you
just
do.
Have to deal with the new rules.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much for your call and helping to demystify some of these transaction fees. 292-8513, we are talking about restaurants and food, and with a little spillover to money, because, of course, money does change hands when people go to restaurants. 292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or reach us on Facebook. We are now going to go to, Mort in Westerville has been waiting, and he wants to have a comment here.
Yes. the only fried food I allow myself anymore is good fried fish. I can find it, which is extremely difficult, but I want to put in a good word for a marked improvement at a surprising place along John Silver's. Over recent years, a lot of fried fish service at various places has been too thin, too overcooked, etc. And Long John's doesn't really keep up the appearance of their places either. So I had gotten away from it, but recently I've tried it several times, and I was surprised to find that they have thick, flaky pieces with excellent coatings. It's really the best I've had in a long time.
Okay, I have two questions. One, where did you find a Long John Silver's? It's been forever since I even saw one. And then two, does it still look like a boat inside?
They don't keep them up very well, and the worst of them is the one that I patronized over on Carl and 161. It's not an attractive thing, and they're not that busy. There is another one, as I recall, out in Pickerington, around Hill Road. I've been out to there on a couple of occasions last year, and there's one on Hamilton Road near, I forget where.
You know where they all are.
Yeah.
Actually, I know one at Greenlawn and South High Street.
I don't have any connection with them.
I want one that looks like a boat.
Had a business trip out there.
Well, maybe an old boat.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your call this morning, 292-8513. We are talking about foods and restaurants here in Columbus. And we have Melanie joining us this morning, who wants to talk about happy hour.
Yeah, I really like going to different happy hours around Columbus, because I found that it's a really good way to get inexpensive drinks of really good quality, and also food at half price, but really good food somewhere a little bit early for dinner. So it's a good cost savings, and it's also a lot of fun. So I'm wondering, what are some really good happy hours around Columbus?
I would try 11, which is next to Hyde Park, until 6:30. There, at least this was the case. I presume they're still doing it this year. I haven't been in a while. They have their small pizzas, kind of designer pizzas, for $4. Their drinks are $4. They specialize in martinis, if that's what you care for. They have a number of other things besides the pizzas, but from I believe 5 until 6:30.
And just down the block from there, literally, my favorite happy hour in the city is probably Marcella's in the Short North. Let me differentiate. In the Short North, the Marcella's happy hour is 4 to 6, and the one at Polaris, it's 4 to 7. And they have half
right,
price.
Because you can't park for more than 2 hours.
Right.
Or it takes you an hour to get off the freeway.
Everything on their appetizer menu is half price, along with their bottles of wine under $36 are also half price. So it's a remarkable deal. If you can get there early enough, I had the misfortune of arriving at 6:02 the last time I went, ordered a bunch of stuff, and including a bottle of wine, and found out I was there a little too late. So that's why I wanted to clarify 6 o'clock cutoff in Short North, 7 at Polaris.
Oh, I'm just unhappy. There's no happy hour for me. No.
Oh, dear. Well, because you have so many children.
I'll take their word for it, though.
Another good one is also G. Michael's down in German Village. Yep. has half price on a bunch of their appetizers at happy hour and drinks as well. So that's two of my favorites, Marcella's and G. Michael's. Yeah.
Well, I have noticed that, although I don't think I've ever had a martini, the cost is $10, $11, $12 in some places.
It's more expensive. Yeah.
You know, you really... can barely afford it.
Well, as we were saying earlier.
I drink those at home, not at restaurants.
Yeah, as we were saying earlier, that's where they're making the money.
But even a glass of wine can be $7 or $8.
Oh, then. Easily.
Same thing. Yeah. State minimums.
I mean, and the $8 is probably pretty cheap. Yeah. Some of those are getting up to $12 and $14 by the glass.
For a 4-ounce pour.
292-8513. We are talking about food and drink and restaurants here in Columbus. And we're joined this morning by Mark. Hi. You with us?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I was just wondering, my name is Mark. I'm from the Columbus area. I was wondering what your recommendations are for good vegan restaurants or restaurants that have vegan options in the Columbus area. I'm obviously familiar with Dragonfly.
Patty Cake. Other than that,
I was just wondering if you had any good suggestions.
I think Patty Cake Vegan Bakery. I mean, you won't find an evening upscale meal, but you'll find great baked goods at Patty Cake Vegan, which is on High Street in Clintonville, and they're trying to expand. I think they've made it through several hurdles on an expansion project and turn into a bigger full-scale eatery, but their bakery, just as for years, turned out bizarre, miraculous baked products that for some reason, even though they have no eggs and no butter, are still completely horrifyingly addictive for me.
That's great.
That's quite a recommendation.
It didn't sound like a recommendation, but it really was. It's
we have to say that Miriam's in rehab now.
That's right.
And Cherbourg as for a bake, a
gluten
bakery.
Free.
It's a gluten free.
And that's been open about, six months?
6 months? Yeah, 6 or 8. Yeah.
To the extent, I don't know how, if they're using anything other than. Vegan products, but it's also gluten free.
I didn't know they were vegan.
Mm. I don't know. That
or close to.
Yeah. I know they're gluten and nut free. I'm not sure that they're vegan.
And you might want to check Columbus Food Adventures, Bethia Wolf's website, because she has tours of various kinds of foods, whether it's gluten free or vegan.
I don't think they've added a vegan tour yet, but I never know. That might be on their agenda.
Well, I think vegan is probably popular enough now that
it could be. Yeah.
Most fine dining restaurants would at least offer one or two.
Most places will at least – well, most places will offer a vegetarian item. I wouldn't say that most places offer a vegan item. That's kind of a stretch, actually.
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction. Yeah.
292-8513. We're talking about Columbus food and restaurants. And we have an email from Robert who is looking for recommendations for Moroccan food.
Morocco.
Someplace.
Well, we once
in the neighborhood of Fez. I don't. I can't think of anything that is exclusively Moroccan.
I can't either. I've got a good friend who's Moroccan. I'm going to ask him before I come on again.
Yeah.
Maybe a listener knows.
Well, and we get very, very good recommendations from our listeners. And I think that this may have come up before where people have asked what kinds of ethnic foods are still missing on the Columbus restaurant scene. And I think Moroccan, actually.
And it's a great cuisine.
And
it's a really interesting cuisine.
For that as well, you might try Bethia's other website, the alteats.com, alteats.com. That features a lot of the different ethnic foods around Columbus, and you may be able to find something on there.
292-8513, and you can email us here at allsides@WOSU. We will take a quick break here and be right back.
Okay.
Connect Ohio wants to get every citizen online. With high-speed internet service, you can do more than you ever imagined. With free classes, it's easy. You can search for a new job and apply from home, take classes online, or visit with your family face-to-face at any time you want. Get connected. Free internet training classes are forming at your local library or community college. To enroll, call 1-855-NOW-I-CAN. That's 1-855-NOW-I-CAN. And find out what you can do with broadband.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Paul Greenberg, the author of Four Fish, The Future of the Last Wild Food. It's about what's happened to salmon, sea bass, cod, and tuna. He says we're in a wave of psychological denial of staggering scope, ignoring the fundamental limits the laws of nature placed on ecosystems. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon. Sunny skies today, a high near 90 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 69. A slight chance of rain overnight, and then sunshine for Saturday, and a high of 92. Partly sunny for Sunday, a high of 87.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on 89.7 come from the law firm of Porter, Wright, Morris, and Arthur LLP, helping businesses and individuals solve complex legal problems throughout Ohio, across the country, and around the world. On the web at porterwright.com.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend. We're talking about food and restaurants with Miriam Abbott of The Other Paper, along with Rich Terapak and his son, Rich, who do restaurant reviews here at WOSU.
I want to compliment whoever is doing the commercial spots.
No, not commercials.
Not commercials.
Underwriters.
The underwriter spots, because they finally hit on the right law firm, Porter Wright, for this program.
Well, except it wasn't for this program. It was for our State House News Bureau.
but on during the program.
Certainly appreciate your employer underwriting the work that's done at our State House News Bureau.
Shameless plug.
We got an email from Daniel who wanted to remark on Need, which is a restaurant on North High Street, down just a little bit south of the main Short North area. And we had lunch there, I think,
last summer. It's across from the convention center, and they have a small patio area out front.
Yeah. And he says he doesn't know if it's organic, but it is certainly local. And they do have, well, at least when we were there, a fairly limited menu. That did seem to be all
from what I understand, they've expanded the menu.
Yeah.
We were there kind of in the early days of mm-hmm. it. Is this Rick and Trista Lopez? Or?
I think
yeah.
so.
Yes.
I've heard it's been expanded. It got voted, I think Columbus Monthly's favorite restaurant in Columbus or something. So we've heard a lot of great things. When we first stopped in, it was fairly limited. Very good, though. I don't believe it's all organic. I think they do a lot of local sourcing. To be entirely organic, by the true definition, is actually quite difficult. Very few restaurants
The farm or the growing area has to be certified.
Exactly, has to be certified organic. I mean,
all their own baked products. So whether they use organic wheat or flour, mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It would be tough to do that.
And we also have a recommendation from Debbie, who contacted us on Facebook, recommending Blue Ginger in Dublin. Who says that they've just opened an outdoor patio. And this must be the one on Sawmill.
Must be.
It is, yep.
And I think we determined last time
it was Royal Ginger.
Royal Ginger at Lane Avenue.
Yeah.
Although we had some...
And they're related, right? Are they related?
I think so.
I believe so. We had some discussion about this. We think so.
But okay.
We weren't able to determine it. Speaking of Sawmill, real quick, I wanted to throw out a comment on a place I recently happened into called Vincenzo's up at Sawmill and 161.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It is absolutely wonderful. Some of the best sandwich subs I've had. They've got strombolis. They also sell a bunch of great wines. And I was actually told by a buddy of mine who's in the restaurant business that the proprietors, they actually get some of the, as far as vending wine, get some of the best wines of anyone in Columbus for, high-end collectors and whatnot as well.
And they've been good for a long time.
This is adjacent to the Trader Joe's Plaza.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. Catty corner to, the giant Whole Foods and everything mm-hmm. and over there. But I had to mention them because I was so blown away. They bake all their bread fresh every day. The place smells amazing. I mean, they only have two tables for eating in, so it's more of a takeout place.
Well, I have some questions because I do go up there pretty regularly. And I see, and sometimes in the fall and the spring, they'll have somebody barbecuing out there.
They'll have a smoker out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I went to their website, but I couldn't quite get a handle on whether it's all takeout and you buy in bulk.
They have two tops. on kind of in the hallway on the way back to the counter. So I ate there. I mean, they're two tables covered with, you know, white paper, and so you can eat in there.
It's
but
like it, our po' boy shop on
yeah,
the West Street.
But it's not common. Johnny and Oaks. And I should also warn folks that these sandwiches are quite large as well, which is not a bad thing, but you could most normal people could easily split one of their meatball or Italian subs.
Normal people.
Normal size people.
Well, my younger brother could eat one. But yeah, that's not a comment on him. He just said he can eat a lot more than I can.
I've been there, I've bought things like breads that were loaded with cheese, things to take home. My experience has not been a dine-in,
it's
more of a carry-out, like what you do at a grocery store.
Carry out, but it's yeah. it has been doing top quality stuff for a number of years. I think it's probably been there 10 or 15 years.
And I think it's mostly Italian.
Yeah.
Pastas, lasagna,
it's entirely Italian. Yeah.
Meatballs, that kind of thing.
Yeah. They make almost all their stuff in-house. They also have some fine imported goods from Italy that you wouldn't find at your normal grocery store. Probably a little bit more pricey than the stuff you'd find at the grocery store.
I get it from Italy.
Yeah, exactly. I got to ship it here.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I've gone by it hundreds of times, and now I think you've probably enticed all of us to stop in and see what it's all about. 292-8513, Jim is joining us this morning. Hi.
I'm sorry, are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Okay, I wanted to recommend, you had mentioned martinis. I wanted to recommend Bar 21 down on North High near 670 because they have fantastic martinis, including this chocolatini, which will just blow your mind.
It's and actually really Bar 23, just to be clear.
Or Bar 23, rather, but they're really quite inexpensive. You know, it's relative to most other places. So
good to know.
And they also have a small patio out front, so it's a really nice place to go after a concert or something downtown. You know, if you want to relax with a martini or something afterwards.
And tell us again, where is it?
It's on North High,
right next to Cup of Joe and Sushi Rock there, and the Cap.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So on the east side of the
camp. It's right there above 670.
Exactly.
I see.
Yeah. Stop by after Red, White, and Boom.
It's a pretty popular place. I know it late at night. Younger days, my wife and I had been there pre-children. it gets pretty jumping at night. But, they do. They did a nice drink.
Before child.
292-8513. We're talking about restaurants here on All Sides Weekend. With restaurant critics Rich Terapak and his son Rich, along with Miriam Abbott of The Other Paper. We have about 10 more minutes here. If you have questions or recommendations, we'd love to hear them. One of the things that I came upon in doing my research for the program today was Club 185. I think it's in German Village.
Sure, an old standard.
Livingston and Mohawk.
Yeah.
And I think that the owners must be from Western New York because on their menu they're featuring a beef en weck, which is a very famous Buffalo and Western New York sandwich. There are entire restaurants that are dedicated to that particular sandwich, which is characterized by hand-carved roast beef and a Kimmelwick roll, which has caraway seeds and salt, I think.
Is that a type of roll or the baker? The
No, it's a type of roll.
Okay.
It's actually called a Kimmelwick weck.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's beef on weck, actually, for everybody. Yeah. Up there with their little Rust Belt accent says Wick. So I'm kind of anxious to go down there and see what else they have got on the, whether it's wings or Texas Red Hots or other foods.
Club 185 does terrific bar food. I've always thought so.
Yeah, they do.
Their burger,
they're double burger.
Being outstanding.
Yeah, very good.
And I think I was there years and years ago on Halloween where some kind of bar fight broke out, and I thought I better not go back.
It's a mostly pretty downtown crowd. I don't think it's any danger to head in there.
Yeah, no, it's pretty sophisticated. And you can park across the street at the church parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
292-8513, if you'd like to join us this morning. We are talking about foods and restaurants in Columbus, and we have Tom joining us this morning who wants to tell us about a new restaurant.
Yes, am I on the line?
Yes, you are.
Okay. On the corner of High Street and Powell Road, I saw a sign for a new restaurant called Spain. I'm wondering if it's the same folks that had Spain over on the west side for many years.
And on 161 for a while. You saying Spain?
Yeah. I just drove by there this morning, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's the same folks or not. It'd be great to have, you know, a Spanish, particularly a Catalan cuisine, someplace close by. It's sort of the food trend of the moment. Anything that is Basque or Catalan,
and how is that food characterized?
Well, it can be
great paella.
Great paella, which by the way usually is not crusty on the bottom as it is when you get it to a lot of places, and as it is in southern Spain. In Barcelona, there, you know, you can take whole shrimp, everything on them, heads and everything, and deep fry them. You can have an avocado base for a paste for a salmon dish, for instance, or salmon bruschetta, capers, a lot of unique, fairly intense flavors, and a lot of it done by way of tapas.
And the Basque region is also well known for terrific cheeses, so you usually find a good good cheese plate at those establishments.
Well, if you check it out, Tom, be sure and give us a call next time and let us know.
I didn't know that Spain had left the Best Western. Are they no longer in the Best Western at 161? Because I thought that was...
That's the last time I was there, but it's been a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But there is indeed a new location up at 23 in Powell Road. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just passed it this morning.
Well, in an unfortunate typo that came up on the screen, the name of the restaurant was Stain, which I thought was a really unfortunate name for a restaurant. 292-8513. And Joe is calling about breakfast. Hi.
Hey there. I was wondering if anybody knew of a good breakfast place, independent diner kind of food in the Sawmill, Bethel Road, 161 area.
Wow. Do you know, that's not an area that's usually
associated
with independence.
Well, you can go to Whole Foods, and they have they have several dining areas in there, but I think I'm sure I've seen people eating breakfast up there.
Yeah, that's an area I generally associate with a lot of good ethnic restaurants, actually, but I can't think of
diner
any.
Diner style.
Yeah, boy.
Oh, that's a stumper.
Yeah, that is
if there's any callers out there, please let us know.
Yeah, 292-8513. We're always open to your suggestions, and we get wonderful suggestions from our listeners. So if anybody does know of a breakfast place in the area of 161 and Sawmill, give us a call.
The tough thing is the location. There are a lot of great breakfast places around. One of our favorites is Skillet, but it's
that's
downtown.
Nowhere close. That's on Whittier and
okay,
Truman.
Henderson and Reed, there's a Greek place that does diner-style breakfasts, or at least there was 2 months ago. And it's in the same shopping center that TJ Maxx is in, which
there
is not the furthest.
I love a good Greek omelet. Feta and gyro meat.
292-8513, and Andrew is joining us.
Yeah, then try your call.
Oh, whoops. Well, looks like we lost that.
Andrew was calling us. We also have Cindy on the line. We'll give him a second try here, and he's on line three.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to tell about a new restaurant that's opening in the brewery district. It's called T. Murray's Bar and Kitchen, and it's really good. It's good. They're going to have a lot, whole big selection of really great wines and really great beers, and it's Italian-based food, but lots of different options, really cheap, and it opens next Friday. So, yeah.
Where's the location specifically?
The brewery district. It's on the corner of High and Beck.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much. Thank you very much.
What was the name?
T. Murray's.
Okay.
And there's
T. Murray's Bar and Kitchen.
High and Beck is, I know, High Beck Bar, Tony's Italian Restaurant, and a Bail Bonds place at that corner. Where exactly is it?
It's actually right next door to the High Beck Tavern.
Oh, in the old Barrister Hall building. Is that it?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's been under renovation for about a year, but it's finally ready
to see,
next Friday.
I'm glad to hear something's going in there. That's great.
Exactly, yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. And from what I understand, the brewery district is... kind of coming back. For a while there, it was really going great guns. And
then the north end took
over. Then the
short
north got big. Yeah. And, yeah. Well, I'd love to see it come back. There's certainly room in the city for two great know,
absolutely, and there's a lot of housing going in down there. And
I think a lot is happening in your neck of the woods, in Bexley. It seems to me every time I turn around, there's something new food-wise going on.
As we were saying, the Aladdin's coming in.
Aladdin's has been there. There's Cafe Istanbul coming in, which has their first location over in Easton. There's the Zen Cha Tea House has moved into a location right there on Main Street. They have a location in the Short North. I've dined there a couple times. Really great stuff. Excellent brunch, actually, on the weekends as well that I really like. And as far as lunch goes, their chicken dumplings are terrific.
We've waited a long time, but it's finally happening. And the great thing is you've got great ice cream within a mile. You've got
three.
Yeah, Grater's, Jenny's, and our favorite Johnson's.
And has anybody taken over the Monk yet?
There are rumors that there is I don't want to say too much. I was actually asked not to. There is somebody who's going to be opening things up. We'll have more information to come on that. It's going to be kind of a high-end bistro.
Good news. Yeah. 292-8513, and we have a caller, Ethel from Westerville, who wants to know about kosher places in that area. Any ideas?
In Westerville? Wow. So I think certified kosher is hard to find. Generally speaking,
I think that's true.
Like Matt's Bakery, which is not in Westerville, but that is certified kosher.
Ethel, are you here?
Well, there's a Kroger on East Broad Street in Whitehall that has a kosher area,
right.
But of course that's nowhere near Westerville.
No.
But
can I interject?
Yes,
yeah,
please.
Absolutely.
Do.
Okay. Actually, my question did not concern strictly kosher, which is different than kosher style. What I'm looking for, and I don't think I'm going to find it here, is a kosher style deli that sells, good corned beef sandwiches, good pastrami sandwiches.
You will find it. There are at least a couple.
In the Westerville area?
Well, no, not in the Westerville area. I'm sorry.
That's my question. Yeah.
Not in the Westerville area.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you might as well finish with your recommendations.
I think the ones we were talking about earlier, I think Lexi has a great pastrami and a great corned beef, as the parent Danny's does.
Katzinger's.
And Katzinger's. Katzinger's is, Bill Clinton's favorite.
292-8513. We have a couple of minutes left. If you have any questions about food or restaurants here in Columbus, give us a call. One of the things that I wanted to bring up, and I'm starting to see this being offered on the retail level, is a new liqueur that's being made in New Albany called Tesora. It's a lemon-based liqueur that is now being sold at the Andersons. And I know that a number of area restaurants have it as well.
Hmm.
When Bozzi Italia did their slow cooking event this spring, the diners apparently requested that they have some kind of after-dinner drink, and this was brought in. But it's a husband and wife in New Albany manufacturing this drink, apparently based on a secret recipe, but it's supposed to be absolutely wonderful. So I just wanted,
did you bring any?
No, no.
I've never heard
it's
of this.
Almost time for a liquid lunch, but probably not today.
It's a holiday weekend.
Yeah. Is it like a limoncello kind of thing?
Kind of like that.
That's what I was
trying to understand.
Yes.
Although from people who have tried it, and I have not, they say it's even better.
And the name again?
Tesora. T-E-S-S-O-R-A.
Huh.
So in addition to our local distilleries now, and of course all the microbreweries, we now have someone making fine liqueur.
Coming up.
Interesting what's happening here in Columbus, especially during a down period for the economy and for employment. People are really becoming very imaginative and starting up some really interesting businesses.
Yeah, some good entrepreneurial endeavors all related to alcohol. But it's great. It's great.
One of the things that we probably should mention is before doing the program today, we not only had lunch at Lexi's on 3rd, but also at the Angry Baker on Oak Street.
Oak and 18th. Yeah. Right across from Yellow Brick Pizza, right. Down on the Old Town East area.
And this has limited dining in capabilities as well. And mostly they seem to be doing baked goods and wholesaling a number of their products.
Right. They've got great baked goods, baked products. They do them all themselves. The bread products are particularly good. It seems like sandwiches are taking off. There's another place I tried recently called Si Senor on Long Street. It's a Peruvian place that has great sandwiches.
Okay, we're going to have to check that out as well. Thank you all who called today. I'm Marilyn Smith. We've been talking about food and restaurants with WOSU's Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Miriam Abbott of The Other Paper. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, WOSU 820 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. News from NPR is next. It's 12 o'clock.
Support for 89.7 comes from Be-Dry Waterproofing, with a patented system that stops groundwater from entering a home's foundation, protecting more than 250,000 homeowners since 1958. 1-800-563-BE-DRY or BeDry.com.